You're listening to another ambitious EntrepreneurNetwork.com podcast, the voice for entrepreneurs and small business. Now, onto the show.
You're listening to Women in Leadership Podcast, episode 67. Welcome to another episode of Women in Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Cross, brand and communication strategist, also known as the Podcasting Queen. Now, according to my guest today, great leaders harness the power of their greatest asset. And I ask the question, are you? Joining me today is Linda Ray. She is a recognized internationally as a thought leader in the neuro-leadership field with over 20 years in leadership development, business, people development, cultural development, and training and design delivery. Linda has completed postgraduate studies in neuroscience of leadership, and her interest in neuroscience and links with leadership inspired her to develop Australia's only nationally accredited diploma of neuroscience of leadership, which has been delivered to students across the globe. Linda has pioneered the spread of neuroscience of leadership in Southeast Asia. She has presented at international and Australian conferences on topics relating to practical application of neuroscience to leadership and business practices. Now, on today's show, Linda's going to share your brain is your greatest asset, and yet this is something that we take for granted. She'll also be sharing understanding the power of mindset. That's key to being a great leader, as well as you've heard of emotional and social intelligence, and both are key intelligences for great leaders. But there's one other intelligence that's critical in being able to enact our emotional and social intelligence and manage our focus in environments of high distraction and overwhelm. We'll be talking more about what this other intelligence is in a moment. So welcome to the show, Linda.
Thanks, Anne-Marie. It's lovely to be joining you.
This interest of neuroscience, can you track that back to a time when you were young? And I just would love to hear the backstory on how you got into this industry, this field.
Anne-Marie, I kind of stumbled upon it by complete accident. And I've got to say, I carried my brain around in my head for about 40 years before I paid it any attention. Mm-hmm. And it was introduced to me by a colleague, said, hey, I think you should look at this neuroscience. It kind of fits with the things you're interested in. And I thought, neuroscience? Oh, gosh, no, I finished science at school and I never wanted to look at science again. Yeah. But I very politely decided I would, you know, have a little look, and the lights went on for me and I thought, oh, my goodness, here is the evidence I've been searching for when I work with leaders, when I'm working with organisations about the things that I know are really important that work and the things that don't work well. Mm. So I decided I better find out some more about this. So I did a whole bunch of going to conferences and I read lots of stuff and I did postgraduate studies in neuroscience of leadership. And what was really interesting is that I'd be at these conferences and I'd be sitting next to these really smart people and we'd all be hearing the same content from neuroscientists and some really interesting, particularly from cognitive social neuroscience. Mm. And the light bulbs would be going off for me. I couldn't write down my thoughts fast enough about what it meant for how I work and how I lead and how I support others to be better leaders. And they'd finish their talk and the people beside me would turn to me and say, well, that's all very interesting, but what does it mean? And I went, someone needs to translate this stuff. And so that's what I've been doing for 11 years now, is I've been translating these really interesting neuroscience concepts and the whole idea that the brain drives behavior and into the so what. What does that mean for how we can lead better, how we can manage change, how we make better decisions, etc.?
Well, thank goodness that you've been able to do that, because otherwise I'm sure there would be lots of great information out there, but we're just not bringing it into the practical sense, but into the boardroom, into how we run our businesses. You said that you'd been carrying your brain around for the first 40 years of your life in your head, not really taking it any or giving it any mind. We often do too. It's our greatest asset, you say, yet we often take it for granted. Let's speak a little bit more about this.
I think one of the things that we don't understand is how much our brain drives behaviour. And I kind of think about it a little bit as imagine you're driving, you know, you're in a car and you're in the back seat. You don't have much control over what happens in the car, do you? And I think a lot of people are in the back seat of their brain. They're not the driver. They're not actually harnessing their brain to get it to work for them. So we know that people experience what we call going limbic. So that's that limbic arousal, but we're not very good at managing that in the moment. So if we can learn to do that, we actually end up being much more productive. We end up being able to manage ourselves much better. We don't spread emotion contagion. So I think it's something that when I share this information with people, I'm not surprised that I find a whole bunch of other people that haven't really paid their brain much attention. But once they start to understand and learn how they can leverage their neurobiology to work for them and tap into this great asset, then they find that they improve their productivity, their decision-making is enhanced, their relationships are improved.
I think also too, you're saying about tapping into this greatest asset and leveraging it. I also think too, from the viewpoint of taking care of it, we only have one brain and how we use it. And in some instances, for some of us, you know, the things that we do or don't do actually ends up, abusing it. And so we want to make sure that we are taking care of the greatest asset. When it then comes to leadership and leveraging, where do you see some of the greatest areas of or insights that we can take away that would see an immediate impact on our productivity? What are some things that you see that we should be doing or maybe not doing in our workplace?
I think one of the things I've been speaking a lot about recently at conferences and with people that I work with is we've entered into this digital age, which is great, you know, and we've got all this fantastic technology that's supposed to support us and enhance our productivity. One of the things I think we haven't done is learnt how to have an intentional relationship with technology. And there's a really wonderful book by a woman called Sherry Turkle called Reclaiming Conversations. And she believes the impacts of the digital age are a bit like climate change. They're sneaking up on us and we don't really understand fully their impact. So one of the things we know, for example, is attention's a limited resource, and yet we treat employees as commodities with endless amounts of attention, and that's just not possible. We cannot be switched on all day long. And what's happening with the impact of digital technology is we're actually seeing changes in brain structure. So we're seeing greater left brain activation, which actually has impacts on concentration, on memory, on our capacity to have empathy. So I guess one of the things we need to start to learn in this digital age is how is technology helping us and how is it sabotaging our productivity? I'll give you a quick example. We know when you're on the verge of an insight or you're working on what we call, you know, heavy thinking tasks, and we all have to do that as part of our day-to-day work. When you're kind of in that deep, you know, zone and your email alert pops up and it goes bing, we know that because the brain's wired for novelty, we can't kind of resist the urge to have a look at that email. And we're also biologically wired for noticing threats. So it could be a threat. It could be that email might be something that will help us or harm us. Mm-hmm. We can't resist looking at it. Exactly. But when we do that, we lose all of the connections and the wiring that's kind of in place in your brain in that moment. And it can take up to 23 minutes to get back into that productive zone. So if you start adding up 23 minutes of lost productivity for every interruption that you experience in a day, it's no wonder people are saying, I'm exhausted. Or when you say, how are you? People go, I'm busy. And then it becomes kind of like the busyness badge of honor. My theory is, actually, I don't know if we are busier, but we're losing so many productive minutes in our day that we feel like we're having to work longer and harder.
Sometimes too, I notice that I have different times of the day where I'm able to think a lot, you know, deeper thoughts. And so particularly early in the morning and even sometimes late at night. So for me, if I start a thought process quite late at night, I know that my brain will start working and I'll never get to sleep. But recognizing that, I think, is very important too, isn't it? So that we can make sure that when we know that our brain is at its optimal, create that environment and allow yourself then to do the work that requires more thinking, that kind of thing, rather than trying, as you said, to stretch that throughout the day when perhaps you may not be at your best. Do you see that this is also something that people aren't aware of?
Absolutely. And I really love another book by Cal Newport called Deep Work. So he talks about deep work as the exactly what you're saying. It's where we're doing that really deep thinking that leads us to have insights and be creative and innovative. And we know that people often, the first thing they do when they walk into or sit at their desk or start their workday, or even before their feet even land on the floor, they do it in bed, they're looking at emails. Mm. Now, that's what he would refer to as shallow work. And so we know that you lose the time when your brain is at its best and when it's freshest and most productive. We waste it doing really meaningless things. Mm-hmm. So what you're suggesting, I think, is really important, that if you know when your productive times are, then you chunk that out in your diary. That's your thinking time. Mm-hmm. And I love some of the people I've worked with. One, they, in kind of understanding this about their brain, they've decided that in their workplace they've instituted the hour of power. Now, the hour of power is an hour that's in every single person's diary, and that's their deep thinking time, and they're not allowed to schedule any meetings in that time. They're not allowed to look at emails. So I think it's those, and these are not difficult practices to implement. It's actually understanding what the benefits are for people and becoming quite, you know, quite ordered and how you do that.
Mm. I think you have to, like with anything in life, isn't it? You have to set that intention. You have to get that in your diary, because it's just kind of like, okay, I got 5 minutes. I have to do some deep thinking. I mean, putting yourself under pressure like that, knowing you've got a myriad of other things on your to-do list and just being distracted is just not the right environment. And I think self-awareness is so important. And once we understand, you know, what does energize us, I know for me, I'm an extroverted introvert. So if I spend a lot of time with people and I've had two solid days full of networking today, well, today I'm now interviewing, I'm behind my computer, and love speaking with people, but I know if I don't schedule in my day chunks of time where I can sit and just be in my own presence, my brain is just going to go, there is no way you're going to get me working for you. I am drained. So we just need to give ourselves permission, don't we?
Absolutely. And you know, when you're trying to work with a tired brain, you have a much greater tendency to procrastinate.
Yes.
And, you know, that doesn't work for people either. And we know that when you're working on something that's kind of not your favorite thing, after about 20 to 25 minutes, your brain's, you know, which is so wired for novelty, is saying, hey, why don't you do something a bit different? And that's when we, you know, kind of surf the net or look at our social media, and then an hour goes by and we go, oh, goodness. If instead you work in what we call 20, 25-minute sprints when you're doing something that you don't particularly love, then that's working with your brain as opposed to fighting against it.
Goodness, there's so many different areas I think we're about talking about how we can really leverage our brain. We could do a whole week's worth of episode on that, I think.
We could.
But let's talk about the power of mindset. It's been key to a great leader. I mean, mindset, I think, underpins everything. We can have the best systems, the best processes, the best structure in place, but if we're not checking in with our mindset, all of that support, structure and process just won't have the impact if we don't have the right mindset, yes?
Yeah, I think we're learning a lot about mindset, and, you know, we have some really wonderful thinkers to thank for that. So if you think about people like Carol Dweck, who talks about growth mindset as opposed to fixed mindset, she talked initially about that in relation to students. Mm-hmm. So we know that people that have a fixed mindset are very reluctant to make mistakes. They find it difficult to learn new things. So they're often quite change wary, if you like. People with a growth mindset, they're willing to try new things. They're willing to make mistakes and learn from those mistakes. They're kind of a little bit more open to taking risks. So, and some of what her research is showing from an organisational perspective is when we have an organisation with a growth mindset, we see higher levels of trust, we see higher levels of engagement, we see higher levels of innovation, and, you know, for for-profit companies, we see better returns. So and one of the interesting things about mindset is it can be changed.
Yes.
It's not something that is in place forever. It's about actually understanding your mindset. Do I have a fixed mindset or do I have a growth mindset? And if I have a fixed mindset, what kind of things can I do to start adopting more of a growth mindset? And we know it, the brain is highly plastic. We can change.
Yes.
It just takes some effort and focus and attention. So that's one area. The other area of mindset that I think there's been some research around recently is the idea of stress. So, you know, we've had all of these programs kind of saying we have to get better at managing stress and we have to become resilient. When in fact, what we know about stress is our mindset about stress impacts our whole physiology. So if we see stress as something that can support us, and Kelly McGonigal, she talks about this idea that you see stress as a challenge response, that it's actually providing the adrenaline and the oxygen and what we need to be able to perform at our best. If we view it in that way, we see stress as an enhancing mindset as opposed to stress as a debilitating mindset. And we know that that impacts on your whole physiology. And in fact, they've looked at research that shows the health outcomes when you have a stress is enhancing. Even though you experience high levels of stress, you have much better health outcomes than someone that has moderate levels of stress but sees stress as bad for them. And so, yeah, I guess it's mindset is something we can think about and we can make it work for us. So the key question for your listeners is to think about, well, what is your mindset around, you know, do you have a growth or a fixed mindset? Do you have a stress is bad for you or stress is good for you mindset? And again, these things change our whole physiology. So
yeah. As you're talking or saying that about, you know, your mindset towards stress, I know that in some instances where there is pressure, where there is what people would call quite stressful, that is when I'll often click into action and it's just boom, 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 things done. Yet when there's plenty of time, I can then tend to procrastinate. So I know for me, putting some clear boundaries and having a little bit of that stress actually fires me up. You know, those challenges actually get me going. But as you say, it is our mindset also to growth or fixed mindset. And, you know, sometimes we can support ourselves, don't you think, by putting into to place a structure that we know is going to support us. As someone who may be a little bit averse to change may require some various steps before that so that they've got some answers to questions that they will often like to have, you know, information in front of them before they make a decision. So what it's really being aware of it, isn't it? And then seeing what can support me.
Yeah, I think so. I guess in the moment when you're making a decision or you're involved in a process, you can be saying to yourself, is that the fixed mindset voice speaking in my head? What would the growth mindset voice say? So that you can have some little tips like that that help you to think about how you could approach things in a different way.
Yeah. And I think often sometimes we don't see areas in how we approach things, how we think about things, how we respond to things, and that keeps us stuck. So I think self-awareness and how we do tend to respond is one of the greatest learnings, because when we know better, we can do better by, you know, taking different actions or having, as you say, different beliefs around something that can change. The fact that we can change, as you said, you know, our brain and certainly our beliefs around certain things is just incredible. I mean, and we're just really at the beginning of the science, aren't we? And what people know about the brain. It's just fascinating.
Yeah, we are at the beginning. You know, there's so much we still don't know about the brain, and I think we'll learn more and more. But there is enough about what we know right now for people to actually be tapping into their greatest asset and doing some things differently.
Let's talk about, because I know people are thinking, what is this other intelligence? We've heard of the emotional and social intelligence, both are very important, as we've said, to be great leaders. But there's another intelligence that's critical, you say, in being able to enact both our emotional and social intelligence, as well as manage our focus and environments when we are highly distracted and highly overwhelmed. What is this other intelligence?
It's an intelligence I call attentional intelligence. And if you think about it kind of as three components, three equal components that I believe are really critical to being a great leader. What I noticed for myself many years ago is I had great social and emotional intelligence, but I also had this thing that I call bright shiny object syndrome. And maybe some of your listeners have that as well. Yeah. Easily distracted, love novelty, you know, looking for the next new thing. And so it meant that I was never the boss of my attention. My attention bossed me around. And I was drawn to concepts of mindfulness, and I love the idea of mindfulness and being present in the moment. And I guess what I started to think is there a different kind of intelligence that I need to be developing, because I'm not so good at keeping my attention focused? And so on the back of a sick bag on the way to Bangkok, I came up with this notion of attentional intelligence, and I started to think, well, what are the key components of attentional intelligence? And there's three key components, and the first one is metasensing, and that's essentially understanding how you're feeling, noticing if you're experiencing some of those, that limbic arousal, which would indicate, you know, you've got a physiological response to something that's happening in your environment. So it's noticing in that, and we actually know that even just saying, I'm feeling, you know, sad, mad, happy, whatever you're feeling in the moment, or I'm feeling a little bit limbic, when you actually say that, it actually dampens down your limbic arousal, which is really important, because when you go limbic, you lose the capacity to think clearly, to make decisions, to plan, decide, etc. So that's the first component. The second component is noticing what's happening. It's called metacognition. So noticing what's happening in your thinking space. So what's happening in your executive brain at that moment? Is it a useful narrative? Is it an unhelpful narrative? So it could, you know, if you link this to the growth and fixed mindset, it could be a fixed mindset narrative. And, you know, is that really helping you in the moment? And the third component is metafocus. So noticing where your attention's placed, and is it where you want it to be? Is it aligned to your goals? And if it's not, to bring it gently back. So the attentional intelligence is essentially the capacity to effortlessly but mindfully notice where your attention is at any moment, and to bring it back to where you want it to be.
That is incredible, because how often can we get distracted and unfocused? And it can happen at a split second, but obviously when we're starting to change or become more aware of it, we have to do so intentionally, don't we? We have to really stop. What am I sensing? How do I feel? As you say. So what have you noticed? Because I'm sure you're doing this quite regularly. What are some of the differences you're now seeing in how you approach your work and productivity?
Very much. I'm very mindful of where my attention is moment by moment. And I've become very good at being able to focus it and keep it where I want it to be. And I think it's probably improved my productivity by at least 30%.
Wow. Yeah.
Some of the people I've shared this with have actually said their productivity has improved by 50%, which is pretty phenomenal.
Yes.
And the other thing I think that is really key, if you link it back to the concepts of social and emotional intelligence. So you're in a meeting, and what do we see at meetings? We see people with their devices, and you're a leader, you're in the meeting, you're dividing your attention between your people and your device. And something happens in the meeting, your attention's on your device. You miss the microfacial expressions of the other people that might indicate a sense of distress, or that they're feeling a little bit limbic. So you actually miss that opportunity to say, you know, hey, Anne-Marie, you're looking a bit uncomfortable with what John's just said. Are you okay with it? So what I'm saying with these three intelligences, if you aren't keeping your attention focused in the moment and being present, then you might miss those subtle cues that allow you to enact your social intelligence. So I think that that's what people are missing is, yep, great to have social and emotional intelligence, but are we missing opportunities to even exercise those?
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes those cues can happen in an instant. And if we are distracted by a device or whatever else is going on, as you say, we can't pick that up. And, you know, moments that could have given us some indication on what that other person is experiencing, feeling, that kind of thing, could have opened up a wonderful conversation to have. Also, too, because I can imagine when we are distracted in this way, I mean, there's been studies that have done that multitasking is where we used to think that was a great skill. And I've shared this many a time where I've deleted my entire website because I was multitasking, and then did I just press that red button, and did that just say warning, and I was on the phone and doing something else. So, and that kind of is like multitasking. We're trying to listen to someone else, we're looking at our device, and it's just not healthy for any of us, and it's certainly not impacting positively our productivity. Yes.
Absolutely. If your listeners take nothing away from this conversation, nothing else away, stop multitasking
yes.
now. The research is absolutely clear. We can only pay attention to one thing at a time. So biologically, our brain can only pay attention to one thing at a time. So when we're switching between one task and another, it can have, you know, really dire consequences, like losing your whole website, Anne-Marie.
Yes.
But we also know that it's in the neuroscience literature, they refer to this as task switching. So you switch your attention from one thing to another.
Mm.
Every time you switch your attention, you actually drain your brain's battery. So it tires the brain out. And, you know, some people would suggest, look, if you're going to be a serial multitasker, you might as well be smoking marijuana, because it actually impacts on your cognitive function to that degree. And, you know, I know that a lot of your listeners are women, and I always feel like I'm letting the sisterhood down when I say this, but women aren't any better at multitasking than men. So we know that when you are multitasking, you actually miss out on very crucial aspects of what's going around you. So again, going back to the meeting example, when your attention's focused on your device, because biologically we can only pay attention to one thing at a time and we need to pay full attention to be able to remember anything, we miss big chunks of what's going on. So it does not improve productivity. It actually sabotages your productivity.
Yeah. And, you know, that's an interesting thing that you said too, that it really impacts our memory. So how often do we, well, I know I do, sort of think, now what was I doing again? And you have to, I'll have to go back to a room. Okay, now what was I doing? Ah, okay, that's what I was doing. Because there is so much information being bombarded into our brain. Something, as you were saying there, about doing different activities and switching from one activity to another, I would imagine that's why batching similar tasks together and working on those is so good, because our brain is using the same processes and doesn't require a lot of switching, and that's why batching tasks, similar tasks together, works so well. Yes, is that correct, an assumption?
Absolutely, Anne-Marie, and I would refer to that batching. I really like that term, actually. I haven't heard that before. Batching as chunking. So chunking your tasks together so that you actually, as you say, you're working on the same components, that and that can be less tiring for the brain. I think it's also important to still meet the brain's need for novelty, because often we will multitask because we're trying to meet the brain's need for novelty. So if you're working on a particular aspect of a task, so, you know, if you're writing, say, a report, and you've got to the point where your brain is really struggling for some novelty, it might be useful to say, okay, well, I know I need to pick a couple of images, so how about I switch to a different part of this chunked out task in order to meet the brain's need for novelty. So you can still work in chunks, and again, it's working with your brain as opposed to fighting against your brain.
I absolutely could speak to you all day. This is so fascinating, this, because it really has absolute impact in the work that we do. And everything you say, I absolutely agree. I mean, there's been times where I have been interviewing someone and my brain is just firing on all cylinders, because it's a very new area that I'm learning. So I know if someone's speaking to me about something that I've known and many guests have explained, I can start to doodle. And that is what you're saying is kind of the novelty. Your brain has to do something different. Amazing. How can people find out more and share a little bit more about the work that you do specifically? How are you integrating this in the work that you're doing?
I think you mentioned early on that we've been delivering a accredited program. We actually just found out yesterday that an advanced diploma of neuroscience of leadership has been accredited. So we're very excited. So that's one of the few credentials in the world that are available. I guess we work with individuals and organisations based on what their need is. So there are what we call brain bites, which are smaller chunks. If people are just wanting to get a bit of a taster or a little bit of an entree, if you like, in experiencing some of these ideas. So we work with individuals, we work with whole organisations. In fact, we're working with, about to start work with a whole organisation where all of the leaders are going through a 12-month neuroscience of leadership program, and all of the staff are being exposed to our smaller chunks of brain bites. So we'll be really interested to see how the engagement levels change over time. We're going to do some research on this, stress levels, absenteeism rates, workers' compensation, all that sort of thing. So,
oh, fantastic. Well, you know, once you get some of those, you know, the feedback from your studies, you need to come back round. We'll link to feature you again, because I think this is just so important. We know there is a lot of demands that we have on our team, but also for women who are working in their own businesses, when you're thinking about how this is going to impact your growing team, this is, I think, an area which just makes so much sense. And as we know, we're always looking at ways and to increase our performance, but also I think that's being aware of what are we doing that is actually minimizing, so we're not starting off on the right foot, we're not creating the right environment. So, you know, there's only so much energy or so much that our brain can do, and if we're draining that before we even get started, I think, you know, there's no hope that we can optimize our performance, can we?
That's absolutely correct. And I think one of the interesting things is we've actually found women have a greater appetite for these ideas at the present moment. That may change over time. And interesting, the research shows that women actually outperform men as leaders once they get past the 40-year mark.
There you go.
And some of the research is suggesting that women, once they get past the 40-year mark, as opposed to men, they continue to engage in professional development, self-improvement. And secondly, they continue to ask for feedback from colleagues. So it's kind of interesting that women seem a little bit more on board with this whole idea of harnessing their greatest asset, their brain. We're hoping that the men will catch up, but it's interesting that women
women are leading
really
the way.
Connected with these ideas.
Amazing. And Linda, what is the best way for people to reach out to you and find out more about these incredible accredited programs that you're running?
They can visit our website, www.neuresourcegroup.com.au. I'm also on Twitter at neurocapability.
Terrific. Fantastic. Well, look, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been lovely chatting with you.
Oh, it certainly has. So I'm sure you listening today have taken away some incredible nuggets. Please reach out to Linda, find out more. As you can tell from what she's been sharing today, it's valuable information. And props to all of those women who are going out and you know, doing that professional development, getting feedback, because it's ultimately going to impact you, your performance, and those that you are there to support in your team. So if this is the very first time that you're joining us today, listening to the show, thank you so much. It's been such an honour. Make sure you subscribe to the show and also reach out to Linda. We'll put all of her contact details to connect with her online on our show notes. All you need to do is go to ambitiousentrepreneurnetwork.com/WIL67. ambitiousentrepreneurnetwork.com/WIL67, and you can click through and get all of those details from Linda as well as subscribe to the show. Other than that, have a fantastic week, everyone. See you later, Linda.
Thanks, Anne-Marie.
Hi, it's Anne-Marie. Have you enjoyed listening to the show and have thought about creating your own podcast so you too can become an influential voice in your industry, but you just don't know where to start? I've created a special gift just for you. It's my free mini training, Podcasting with Purpose, where you'll learn what you need to do to stand out, be heard, and influence your audience from your very first podcast. I'm also giving you my step-by-step podcast production workflow checklist, including the tools I use, as well as a checklist of no-cost and low-cost tools to get you started. To access, go to annemariecross.com/mini-training. That's annemariecross.com/mini-training.